TFM.
Welcome, Stargazers, to another episode of The Artificial Tango, our dedicated Star Trek Picard podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I'm sorry it took me a little while to get you into the recording meeting today, but all the transporters were down and I didn't know what to do.
Oh, I mean, well, I get that's fine, Chris. I mean, I understand. You just needed some time with the Borg Queen alone.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I get it. I mean, who doesn't?
I mean, sorry to leave you hanging there on the side of the street like that.
I mean, just waiting in the desert of California. It's hot and we have no water because we didn't bring a canteen and we're really thirsty. And we've just been sitting here for at least a good 45 minutes to an hour and calling you, and that's fine.
I'm sorry. I had an alien to shoot. Anyway, let's get into things here. Today, we're going to be talking about the fifth episode of Star Trek Picard Season 2, Fly Me to the Moon. And here's a quick rundown of the story. At last, the focal point of the divergence is revealed as Laris lookalike Talon, who may or may not be a cat, brings Jean-Luc to her apartment and reveals that she has devoted her life to protecting one of his ancestors, René Picard. When Jean-Luc realizes that Q is trying to talk René out of taking part in a pivotal spaceflight, plans are set in motion to make sure that they fly her to the moon. Meanwhile, the Borg Queen discovers the wonders of radio and pushes Girardi a step too far while Raffi and Seven successfully bust Rios out of the ice bus. Oh, and Brent Spiner is back as the Soong family tree grows new branches. So Matthew, it's time for us to call 323-634-5667 and get this discussion started.
Well, you can actually call that number, and there's a recording there, which from Q. So
I thought that was kind of cute and clever. And I love the business card itself. Check your 3D printer.
Yeah, I mean, because we've all got them these days. It's like, you know, back in the day when they were like, check your fax.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we still say that here in Japan, but yeah. I got you. It's interesting, actually. Of course, we didn't realize it until we saw the business card on the screen, but that business card is in the title sequence. So it's been floating around ever since the first episode. We just didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. And it's one of those things where, you know, what's happening in that storyline, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but just in general, that's one of the things that does kind of tie back a little bit to season one, mm-hmm. because, you know, we're using... you know, Daj and Soji, those two characters, this is apparently where that comes from. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe we should just talk about that now, Chris, since we're talking about it.
Okay. Well, we're on that one. So,
yeah, yeah. So, that's a fascinating part of the story. This idea that this could be the original Soong.
Well, it might be because his name is Adam Soong. And mm-hmm. so naming him yeah. Adam made me think that they are implying mm-hmm. that he is the first in this line.
The originator. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's fine. I have no problem with that. Obviously, you know, we set that precedent to an Enterprise doing that as mm-hmm. well. And I'm really fascinated in this story because one of the things that I love the way it connects is that Adam Soong is desperate. And desperate people are willing to do anything to fix their problem. And Q here is desperate. But we don't know why yet. Mm-hmm. Q says, I'll get what you can do for me later. And kind of the why behind that, which I think is fascinating. But Q has this whole thing, like he talks about, you know, he's taken time for granted and it's yeah. abandoning him.
Yeah.
So what is it that is making Q so desperate because of this idea of something's happening to him? Is he dying at this point? finally.
It sort of implies that because he says, now she is threatening to abandon me. And the whole idea of Q and the Q themselves is that they are eternal, that they are timeless. And I don't know what this seems I have taken time for granted part might mean, but it does feel like, and this is not connected to him losing his powers when he snaps his fingers in episode before last and nothing happens. And in here he mentions that it seems like I have limitations now. So disconnected from that, the whole arrival at the beginning of the story and setting up this test for Picard, that seems maybe to me connected to the idea that time is threatening to abandon me and he's doing something to try to save himself, and we don't yet know what that is.
Right. No, absolutely. And I love this connection with Sung because, you know, again, this desperation that he has and him being a geneticist, it leads to all sorts of questions. You know, I mean, does Rene Picard not going on this mission create the milieu then for Sung's genetic creations in the augmented humans to not have the resistance necessary to kicking them off of Earth so that they'll leave?
Ah, that's a good point.
And so that's what gives us the galaxy, that a safe galaxy is a human galaxy. And
which is a quote from Adam Sung, actually. He's the one who started saying this. And so that's why I think your point, I had started thinking about a similar thing, is really important. That, yeah, maybe they stick around on Earth. That leads to that tyrannical future.
Absolutely. And again, what I do also think is great about this is that, you know, the whole thing of the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And his intention is just to save his daughter and other people like her.
Right, right.
She has this horrible genetic disease, which she can't go outside. She can't even be near dust in the air because it can cause her respiratory system to collapse. And so this desperation that he has is so perfect for the story. And I also think, too, you know, Q says to him, which is fascinating, he says, "We're all hostages to what we love. Mm-hmm. And the only way to be free is to love nothing."
Right.
And that's meaningless, which, you know, in a world where, you know, people don't believe in a supreme being, the only thing that gives us meaning is our relationships in the first place, right? Therefore, I'm wondering, like, this brings the question, and I think the key then to understanding Q is the key to what he just said to Sung in that scene, which is, what is it that Q loves that is being taken away from him?
Apart from the obvious,
and we don't have
his powers. But I don't think that's the answer.
Is it his power? I mean, but yeah, is it the Q continuum itself is threatened for some reason?
That's possible.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, what else does Q love more than himself?
Yeah. I hadn't thought too much about the Q angle of that comment, but it does make sense. Maybe his very existence is what he loves the most, or his ability to harass people. That could be it. Or,
I'm not going to be able to meddle in Picard's life anymore.
Exactly.
Dang you!
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. The Sung part, though, is quite interesting because, like you said, his intentions are good. He's simply trying to save his daughter. But there is that scene where he is explaining to the panel, he's trying to defend what he's doing, and they're telling him that you can't do this. By the way, I love that we have a time travel story, and the chairman of this panel is Leah Thompson from Back to the Future.
Yes.
And of course, she directed an episode as well. So she's around with the franchise here now.
That was perfection. Honestly.
But I loved that. But she mentions that you're doing this research with a privatized military organization with former soldiers. And I think that's where maybe it plays in, like Adam Soong's intentions are good. He's trying to save his daughter, but his research will be used by the military to create genetically enhanced soldiers, and then things snowball from there, which leads to the militarization and the tyrannical future and what Picard does in that timeline. I think that's one of the keys that, we didn't consider until this episode when the storyline appeared.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and you could even have the thing where Renee Picard is possibly, because she stays back, you know, she doesn't go on the trip, she becomes one of the first people to go through this process and becomes one of the quote unquote first augments, you know, of that this run. You totally see that kind of thing happening. But I mean, I think you're absolutely right. You know, one of the things that you do see in his conversation with the panel is that he is driven by his desire to save his daughter, but he's also hungry scientifically to see what we can do to perfect humanity.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, that's obviously what gets us into trouble. And so, 100% think all of this is tied together, which is really fun. And again, it just leads us to question, okay, what is Q's game here? What is it that he's trying to do, and what's driving him to do this? And, you know, Chris, one of the things that we have really talked about with this season that we've liked is the fact that we're really digging into character. And to actually dig into the character of Q in this way, I think is very fascinating, because Voyager tries to, I think, in some ways, you know, I don't know, they almost neuter Q in a lot of ways. And I feel like this is a very good deconstruction of Q and what drives him as a character, just as we're doing with all of our other characters in this series.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And so I appreciate that that's what's making this interesting, because it's making us ask questions which we never thought to ask about characters we've been watching for, 30 years now?
Well, Q is a character who we never really knew what made him tick or what was driving him, right? He would appear in episodes to create havoc for the crew. And he seemed to get kicks out of it. And there were only rare occasions where there was some other problem, like when he actually had his powers taken away for a while, or there was the Q Civil War. In that case, there was a bit more of a reason for why he needed to be there, needed help. But it wasn't anything like this. It wasn't like delving into the psyche of Q and, and actually being able to see ourselves and the things that we struggle with in a character who's been portrayed as being omnipotent. So a much more real portrayal of Q is what we're seeing here.
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally agree with you. And
you know, his description of himself, when Soong asks him, "Who the hell are you?" And he says, "I am the evolution of stardust. I'm the gentle flutter of a butterfly. I am death, destroyer of worlds." And, you know, that, of course, is very close to Robert Oppenheimer's quote after the first atomic bomb test, and the butterfly, a reference to changing time. And the evolution of stardust made me think of who the Q are themselves, and actually who we are. All of us are, you know, we're all made of stardust, and we've all come to be what we are as humans, ultimately because of stardust. But he continued that quote, and he said, "I'm also a big fan of your work." This is one thing I wanted to talk about before we completely move away from Soong. Q said, "I'm also a big fan of your work, and a visionary who knows how important you are to the future of this planet. And then that made me stop and think, okay, so how does Soong play into the altered future that we see, as well as the future that we know?
Right.
And actually, this comment, either path, Soong is pivotal because if, like you were saying earlier, he and the augments, they never leave Earth, and that carries Earth down this more, you know, militaristic future where humans see themselves as superior to every other life form in the galaxy. That leads us to the future that we see right now that they're trying to change. But if he pushes things to the point where humans decide we have to exile these people, he's also very important to the future of the planet because it's that decision to exile them that perhaps allows the more benevolent Federation that we see in the future to take shape. So either way, he's important. So I wasn't able from that comment to really decipher how that might play into what Q is trying to do and the role that Soong plays.
No, I think that's a great point, but I love that you're kind of pinning it perfectly, which is either way he's important. Mm-hmm. It's just in the way in which I think the reaction then and the way it's the reaction to Soong and what he's going to do. And I think it comes down to what Renee Picard is going to do, which is she's going to discover sentient life on Io. And that's going to lead humanity, a part of humanity, to reject this idea that a safe galaxy is a human galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if she doesn't do that, it, you know, something else is going to trigger humanity to have the reaction where they hold on to that idea, which is great. I mean, I think it really works. And in the end, I think it's fascinating because in many ways, Q reminds me of the MCU's Loki, right? He starts off as just this mischievous character, and then they continue to kind of unravel him. And this season, really, I think specifically, seems to be about kind of peeling back the layers of Q to figure out deep down what makes him tick. And it's a terrible process getting to that point, you know? And I'm wondering, okay, are we going to end up in a place where we kind of land where he's a character that in any way you can find some understanding with? Or is he truly going to be unmasked as the ultimate villain, like bigger than the Borg, you know, when it comes to his ultimate plan? So I love that everything right now, episode 5 here, it's open, and I'm still very interested now to see, you know, as we've got the rest of the season now, the second half of the season, where does this go? Because it's like we've set all of this stuff up, and it's like now we can hopefully start to have some of those dominoes fall as we answer some of these questions.
Yeah. I feel like he's not going to be unmasked as being the ultimate villain here because I still think, as we've been talking about each episode, the ultimate point of this story is it's internal about Jean-Luc Picard. And as a side to that, I think we're seeing a mirror, a little bit of that in Q himself. And somehow they both need to go through this sort of, Q called it a penance, but it's a more of a trial of internal emotions or identity or coming to terms with oneself. Something along those lines that's playing out, and it's primarily Picard, and then it's also playing out in the other characters, including Q. The Io thing, I'm glad you transitioned to that because I was about to as well. Because the line, it happens so quickly in the conversation, and Jean-Luc just says, we just know that Renee found this life form, this microorganism on Io that she thought was sentient, and she convinced the mission commander to bring it back to Earth. And then they go on with the story. And so the first time I watched, it took me a second to catch what was happening, what he was saying. And then the second time I caught, okay, so on Io, she finds this and she brings it back. And then the more I thought about it, I came to the same conclusion that you did, that that discovery somehow prevents Adam Soong's research from dominating human thought. Like, that's the pivotal moment. And so she has to go on this space flight. Now, Q clearly does not want her to go on this space flight. He is even asking Soong to help him get rid of her, because he can no longer do it himself by just snapping his fingers.
Which, I mean, I thought was interesting. I had no idea it was actually going to be right.
Yeah, you were right about what we discussed about the girl with the book in the plaza. Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, what I thought was brilliant here with this whole idea of René Picard, and what it's what's great at this is that Picard has referenced the Picards who were famous in his lineage.
Right.
And he has talked about this idea that that Picards were pivotal in many parts of human the human experience, human history, especially in terms of space travel. And so to come to this, I think, was great, because we're really picking up on, you know, that part of Generations and using that as a story element here, which is phenomenal. But one of the things that I was really fascinating, and this is just kind of about that way in which René relates to Picard, mm-hmm. and I think the way in which the storyline between Picard and his mother and the experience that, you know, that family had there, there does seem to be a thread of melancholy that runs through this family. And I think specifically, this is one of the ways in which we're going to crack open the character of Jean-Luc to show that it is his fear of opening up in relationships because of what happened with his parents, but that has led him to deal with his kind of melancholy about the situation in a way that is kind of unhealthy. He portrays it on the outside as being fine. But we heard, you know, I think Agnes rightly get on to him just an episode ago about the idea that you pretend like you have feelings so that nobody questions that you're not really having feelings mm-hmm. or deep feelings the way you should. And so phenomenal, I think, that the introduction of this character and what she's struggling with has a reflection on the Picard we all know the most.
Yeah. True, exactly. While we're talking about Renee, as I said, your prediction in the plaza was spot on. That was her. And she is the pivotal figure here, although we still don't know exactly in what way, other than Q does not want her to go on the mission. So probably, I'm still thinking this discovery of the microorganism is going to be the key, especially now that the Soong story has been introduced. Let's talk about the supervisor a little bit, because that is what we thought. She is Aegis. She is from Gary Seven's organization. And she's not Laris. So having her look like Laris, however, I think is key to the Picard aspect, the Jean-Luc aspect of the story. In particular, because they give us that just momentary flashback to the scenes in Stargazer where he's actually sitting outside drinking wine with Laris. And they don't go any further with it right here, but it feels like something that's going to come up here and there. And there is dialogue later in the episode where it's Raffi, right, who's saying, you know, she looks just like, doesn't that bother you? He's like, yes, it does. It's weird for me. And so having her look like Laris, I think, is key to the story. But I love that they're digging in and they're pulling this one element from the original series with Gary Seven and what these supervisors do, and they're making that another part of the Star Trek story. And we also, at least if I think back to when I was growing up and watching the original series and seeing Assignment Earth, you kind of feel like Gary Seven's a time traveler. But Talon here says she hates time travelers, which doesn't mean she's not a time traveler right. herself, but she doesn't like people jumping around through time. But it doesn't seem right. like these supervisors just appear at a certain point in time when they need to. Like, they set up their lives there and they stay in this one place. She's been protecting Renee for 24 years, they say.
I thought that this was very interesting, obviously, about Talon, the idea that she's basically a guardian angel, a time traveling guardian angel. And
well, that's what Guinan calls them in the previous episode, right? They think of themselves as guardian angels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And she even talks about the idea that, you know, they are there to guard the grand tapestry of history and even a single thread, which all comes back down to the idea of the story of tapestry in TNG.
Yeah.
That the idea of what we understand, that if you pull one thread, that's what we learned in that episode. You pull one thread, you can completely screw all of history, which is exactly what Q is doing, isn't he? He is pulling one thread, and that is going to irrevocably change all of human history for the worse, at least from our perspective.
Well,
right?
Galactic history, you could say.
Well, not just human history. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. No, you're 100% right to call that out. And so I think, you know, that is something that's really fascinating. And then what's also interesting is that she has no idea who Q is.
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah.
Which is somewhat strange that this organization, or I mean, this organization could, I guess, but she might not.
Yeah,
but that they would have no probable. Understanding of the idea of the Q.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, that was. But it is probable that the organization knows who the Q are and they don't necessarily share that information. I don't know why they wouldn't share that information, but it
right.
but it is plausible that it is like a need to know basis or something like that. I don't know. I think
no, absolutely.
I think more so it just works for the story. Like, if she knew who Q was, the overall story would be a lot weaker. So it's one of those elements where, you know, it's like the transporters being down, right? It's one of those elements where you need it to work for the story. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's that case. Anyway, I like this aspect of the story.
Well, and I think it's, you know, you rightly pointed out, you know, looking back through Star Trek history to pull out story elements and threads that you haven't really used yet for your benefit, isn't that exactly what Deep Space Nine did so well?
Yeah.
That's what we always praise that show for, is taking threads that you yourself had placed out there.
Yeah.
Or taking threads that other Star Trek series had placed out there and picking those up and running with them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's phenomenal that they would do that, because that's exactly what you're honoring the past and creating something new all at the same time. And
well, that's
exactly what we want.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the key, is that you find those elements and you pull those threads and you make it work for your story, but you do it in a way where it's pivotal to your story and it's building on the past, and you're creating something new. You're adding texture through the use of this past element, as opposed to winking at the past or throwing it in as a reference to try to show how much research that you have done on past Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And just throwing stuff in as fan service, basically. Like, hey, we remember that there's this alien and that there's this thing that happened. Because we get a lot of that in Star Trek. But here, it feels like they're finding more obscure things. Now, Gary Seven's not obscure. It was an entire episode mm-hmm. about it, but it was never revisited on screen. So it was a one-time right. thing. But I think the things you point out more about Picard's ancestors and the melancholy and these little elements, I think are key. And things like, we didn't talk about it when we were talking about Soong, but I love the way they very subtly in this episode explain the first season of Picard and why Data mm-hmm. painted that picture of daughter. He called it daughter, and it wasn't Law. It turned out to look like Daj right. and Soji and now Corey. And it's because, like, the memory of Corey, who is the actual human, is in the brain of the androids. And, like, yes. Data remembers that image and probably didn't really think much about it. He just painted it and he named it daughter. And now we know why. Right. So that type of subtle little connection also, I think that they're doing a nice job of.
No, I 100% agree with you. I think that's what is, this is the kind of thing that you want.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing here is Talon explains that sometimes protecting the Grand Tapestry means protecting a single person. And
right.
I thought that that was important for them to point out, because Gary Seven was checking in on two agents who were missing, and those agents were on Earth to watch over an event that needed to happen. And it is true here that, like, this Europa mission needs to happen, but actually, I don't know if the Europa mission itself is so pivotal. What's pivotal is that Rene Picard is on the mission. And so there is a difference mm-hmm. here between what Talon is doing and what Gary Seven was doing. And mm-hmm.
yes.
I'm glad that in the dialogue, they did point out that distinction. Sometimes it means mm-hmm. protecting one person, because that allows us to maybe understand the nature of what these supervisors do a little bit better mm-hmm. without having a lot of fan debate about, well, you know, Gary Seven wasn't watching over one person. I think the writers are thinking about these things.
I think you're 100% right, Chris. And I think that's one of the things that has made this season so interesting. And for the most part, very well done, is that they have been really thinking through these elements and weaving them into the story. Now, we have praised this season, I think, for the most part. But I would say there is one egregious error in this episode that really bothers me, because it is a story contrivance that they need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for no other reason. And it's that the rescue of Rios happens before we see Agnes need to shoot the Borg Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to not immediately call for extraction, we were making fun of this at the beginning of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing in that time period so that Agnes has to face this situation alone, when in all reality, they should already be back?
Yeah. Yeah. The time doesn't quite line up there, because they are rescuing Rios from the bus at the same time that it appears that Agnes is sleeping and the Borg Queen is discovering the wonders of primitive radio. And Agnes is in the house. She's not on the ship at that point. So I suppose you could think that they can't get in touch with her because she's not in the ship. But of course, if that were the case, there should be a scene where we hear them calling for extraction mm-hmm. aboard the ship, and then she's just not on there. Like you say, it is a contrivance for the story, because if they call immediately, as they should be able to, and she beams them back over, then the whole confrontation with the Borg Queen one-on-one with Agnes cannot happen the way it does. And if that doesn't happen, the overall Agnes story for this season can't happen. At least they would have to set it up some other way. It can't happen right in this moment. And yeah, I kind of wonder, I'm just thinking right now, if they had more than 10 episodes to work with, might they bide their time a little bit more in bringing the Borg Queen and Agnes together as one instead of forcing it to happen in this story the way that they do?
Well, I think the easiest thing to do in the story is just re-edit it. And you put the moment where they save Rios after she shoots him. Like that's the next scene.
Yeah, that would
work. So you focus on the other two stories sooner in the episode so that when that happens. So, I mean, this is not an actual issue. It's an editing issue. And so whoever edited this issue should be fired, because it makes a problem where there doesn't actually need to be a problem. And I'm not saying that to be mean, or that, look, I don't make television shows. I'm just a podcaster. But if I can pick out that issue and solve it like that, then it's not actually an issue. It's just an editing problem. Yeah. And that's unfortunate, because this season has been, I think, so diligent in its building of these stories so that they feel very organic and very well laid out. This is an issue that it's like, that, how did somebody not catch that?
Yeah, well, that's a great point, because it is true that that scene could be placed not anywhere in the episode, but in many places in the episode. And it could have just come after the shot, because we see the shot and so she shoots the Borg Queen, and then when she beams them in, she already has the blood all over her. Yeah, I have to think a little bit about it, but yeah, it could be re-edited in a way that makes it flow a little bit better so that it doesn't feel like a story contrivance.
And you could still save the surprise of you know, the missing scene of what happens, you know, after she, you can still do all that. It literally is just about focusing, instead of, you just kind of shift scenes around so that the Agnes storyline kind of comes in a little bit later in the episode instead of the beginning. And then, and then that way it makes more sense.
Let me ask you about that scene that we see later, where we actually see the exchange between the Queen and Jurati. How did you feel about that? Did you feel like that was over explaining a little bit? Like, for me, I can accept that the Borg Queen and Agnes, like the Borg Queen is living on in Agnes's mind without such an on the nose explanation. Like, I almost felt like a naivety in Agnes in that scene. Why is she standing there entranced by the Borg Queen, allowing this verbal exchange to continue and then letting the Borg Queen touch her in that way? That felt a little, it was a little bit much. I probably would have preferred to just know that they've had this link since early in the season. We know that the Borg Queen went into her mind. They obviously have some sort of connection. And yeah, that scene was, it wasn't terrible for me or anything, but when they started showing the details of it, I was a little bit surprised by Jurati's behavior there at the end. But what did you think about it?
That's interesting. I mean, this is, I think, the most obvious story of the season.
Yeah,
in the sense of the tracks that they have been laying for where this is kind of going. And I didn't have an issue with them because I thought the way they did it was relatively well done in the sense that Agnes is being drawn to the Borg Queen.
Yeah, that's true.
To try and almost alleviate the pain because of the pain that she herself is feeling because they now have this link to which, you know, we as an audience member don't understand that this is a thing until the moment the Borg Queen says it, because this is all new as to what's happened in the episode.
Right. Well, Jurati does start acting a bit odd, and she's like, what's happening? So you can tell that she's feeling pain as well as a result of shooting the Borg Queen. So in that sense, the scene works to show that connection. But it's a connection that I already knew was there.
Well, I would say, and maybe I'm just an idiot, which is a total possibility.
Got an episode title,
but I didn't realize that. Yeah, I'm just an idiot. It's fine. It's true. I didn't realize how deep their connection was in the sense that the Borg Queen had left a piece of herself in Agnes. The depth to which that goes to.
Yeah, and I mean, so you knew she had left a piece of herself. You just didn't realize how deeply it was.
How that would work out, exactly, and in all that. So, you know, I think all of that works. And I what was most interesting about it is that I was thinking to myself as I was watching the scene just for the first viewing and then even again in the second viewing, your idea, you know, I got right about Renee Picard, but I think your idea holds even more weight now, which is that the Borg Queen that comes through the rift is actually Agnes.
Yeah, I'm quite sure it is. Yeah.
So, and I think that makes even more sense now. And what's interesting about that is how that could, the ramifications of it. And what that could mean for the Borg-human relationship and the Borg relationship with the rest of the galaxy moving forward.
Yeah. I'm curious if they're going to go into that this season or next season, because it's possible that the end game of this storyline is simply, as I mentioned last time, to create some sort of cyclical nature for this story that the Borg ship coming through the rift with the mysterious Borg Queen, who is actually Agnes, and the voices calling out for help, which I think is humanity, or it could be the galaxy, like other aliens from the galaxy who are crying out for help, for protection against humans, as they have turned out in this timeline, that's the end game, so that it sends them back in time so that they can then fix things. And that's one of the tricky things about time travel is if you go back in time and you fix something, is it really fixed? Does the cycle not just keep repeating? Is this where you get into the multiverse theory where, you know, it splits and this thing keeps going? It's very confusing.
Well,
and as Janeway would say, it gives you a headache if you think about it. But so I don't know if they're going to delve into this thing that you're talking about between Borg human relations, but it would, I think, make for an interesting storyline.
Well, and Star Trek likes to have it both ways,
yeah,
in the sense that it has basically played by the rules of Back to the Future, which is you change something in the past, it changes something in the future, and it's played by those type of rules instead of the rules, which is that if you go back in time, that actually, what all that happened becomes your past, and now your future is where you are. And so, you know, all that stuff, which again gives you a headache. So, I gotta say, you know, Chris, one of the things about the episode is just the way it ends, in the sense that we go to this big party and the whole thing is us getting into this gala.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And basically turning this into Mission Impossible.
Yeah, right.
Because this exact thing is how Tom Cruise's character, Ethan Hunt, gets into a party with an RFID chip in Mission Impossible Fallout. So I thought that was really funny. And now, of course, the fact that, you know, Agnes is controlled, or at least in partnership with the Borg Queen, puts that into doubt as to whether that's all going to work the way they want it to. But yeah, I mean, I love the ending of the episode because I am on the edge of my seat for what happens next week.
Well, you mentioned the RFID chip as a way of getting to the party, and this shows how storylines like that are updated for the times by going so deep into facial recognition. In this story, they're just updating the same idea that made sense at one point with RFID technology, which is now very mainstream too. Facial recognition, which is a huge, I think, societal danger these days. And if you look at a country like China, you can see how facial recognition can really be used to control a society in the name of security, which is kind of what we're seeing here. Yeah, they want to keep this gala safe, and they want to keep the Europa mission safe, but the technology that they're deploying definitely, I think, crosses some lines, which are not discussed in the episode, but if you're looking at Star Trek for a social commentary and warning, it's something that you could run with in a future story, for sure.
Yes.
But I love the way the tone suddenly shifts in near the end of the episode, where, like you said, it becomes like Mission Impossible, or it reminds me of Ocean's 11 type Casino Heist, or Bada Bing Bada Bang on DS9. It's this...
Yes.
It's just this, let's all get together and come up with a plan. And here's how we're going to get into this place and do this thing that we need to do. And then I love Agnes coming in. Of course, she looks amazing in her red dress. And she plays the part so well of you kind of feeling at first like she's blowing her cover. But then that's actually the whole goal, because she wants to get into the control room in the first place. And also having the Picard Borg time travel connection to all of this, it also reminded me of that moment in First Contact where suddenly the tone switches when we go into the big goodbye in the holodeck. And part of it is because of the music. Part of it is the scene. Part of it is just the sudden shift in tone of the story.
Yep. 100% agree with you. And I think it makes it, you know, really interesting then, just for where we go next. And I do hope that the season here, I know that we've had season 3 completed now. They finished filming and everything. I really do want this season to kind of end on its own terms and kind of lead us into the next season, rather than just kind of being a continuation, really.
Yeah, because last time you asked that question, right? Yeah. Would it end at the end of the season, or would it carry over? I feel like with all the revelations that we got in this episode, and with this being the middle of the season, I think it's probably going to wrap up at the end of the season. It's starting to feel more like a self-contained story to me.
Yeah, absolutely is what I hope. And I think part of that is because, you know, I feel like the story has a good resolution, and I'm interested in the answers to the questions that we have been asking about Q and Picard and all of these things. I really want to see what happens with those questions, and maybe it's, you know, I just don't want to have to wait for an entire other season to kind of get the full effect.
Right.
Because the full answer.
Because unlike waiting for the Best of Both Worlds part 2 for 3 months, we could be waiting for a year to find out if
Right.
There's
exactly.
any sort of major exactly. cliffhanger to it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't want to be left hanging, like, waiting for Guffman, because we'll just keep waiting and waiting and waiting.
Well, and, you know, I don't want to keep waiting, like waiting to find out if Alf made it home or not at the end. And no, people, don't send me tweets or emails telling me that there's a movie called Project Alf, because I know that and it's an abomination. The Tanners aren't even in it. So anyway, I can picture the season ending with them, of course, repairing the damage that Q has done, and with it ending back at the chateau with Picard and Laris drinking wine together, as we saw at the beginning.
Yeah.
I can see it wrapping up that way.
I would love that. Or them, you know, him asking her out on a date.
Well, that might happen as they're sitting there, drinking wine. And then the third season is just all about their date. That's the whole season. It's like 10 episodes of their date.
Yeah. Yep. Every episode is a part of their date. There you go.
Exactly. All right. Well, I think we've covered all the key points in this episode. Do you have any final thoughts? And what's your rating?
I think the revelations in this episode are good. And I think it makes for a really great place for the viewer waiting for what comes next. I think, unlike the other episodes, though, we have a very avoidable logic leap that's not needed in the episode, and therefore it definitely hurts the episode, especially when I in the rewatch I was like, oh that's unnecessary. And therefore I would say, even though the revelations in this episode would probably have put this at a 4 out of 5, the actual execution of the episode with the editing mistakes is probably a 3.5 out of 5 red dresses.
All right. Well, for me, I think the revelations were great. Apart from the Agnes Borg Queen thing, I did not see a lot of the revelations coming, which was good. I think that the writing of the elements that are pivotal to the story has been quite good so far. I love the introduction of Adam Soong and how they're building on that part of Trek lore in a way that matters to the story and also explains some other things. I love that we're delving more deeply into Q so that he's not just a comical troublemaker as he so often has been. And the story itself, I think one thing that I'm enjoying is the setting of it being on Earth in 2024, which is something that when they first gave us a glimpse of what the season was going to be about, I kind of rolled my eyes at, because I thought, we're going to go back, time travel again, 2024. But actually, I think they've built a nice framework for themselves to tell a story that's a bit different. And I think different is the key, because I saw someone who I know mentioned that they're having trouble getting into this season, but they don't know why. Like, they notice that other people are saying that it's a really great season and they're just not feeling it. And then I saw someone else who replied to that and said, maybe because it's all been done before. And I thought, that's kind of a throwaway response, because yes, this has been done before. Matthew, you and I talked about how, in a sense, it is a grab bag of Star Trek's greatest hits, but the way that they're putting those pieces together to support a story that's a lot deeper than just throwing together aspects of Star Trek that people have loved in the past is what makes this season great so far. So that's why I'm really enjoying it. And the thing about the editing and the order of the Rios rescue and Jurati shooting the Borg Queen, as you point all of that out, I completely agree. Yeah, that should be re-edited. Watching it, I didn't pay so much attention to it myself. And so I think that that might be one reason it got overlooked, is that maybe people are focusing more on the other elements of the story and just kind of overlooking that. And that kind of thing does happen quite often in Star Trek. But of course, as a creative myself and as an editor, I do wish someone had picked up on that and said, maybe we should flip this around because it would have made the story better. But in the end, I'm going to give this episode 8 future changing microorganisms.
Nice. Well, Chris, I do want to comment on what you said, because I mean, for me, it was a huge thing coming into this season. Something I was very worried about, that we were going to just be retreading ground that Star Trek had already been on, especially with something like Future's End and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that so far this season has created its own identity. Yes, we're using some familiar things from Star Trek, you know, like I thought was a groan moment with the guy on the bus. Mm-hmm. But the rest of this has definitely been very much its own thing. And I think that's the part that's made it a good season, is that it has not felt like a retread in most areas, which is fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
So hopefully that will continue. And part of that is what we've been talking about, which is that we are using this as an opportunity to dissect and deconstruct characters in a way that we've just never done before, and characters that which we've known for so long. So it makes it a worthwhile journey. And hopefully this journey will have been worth taking by the time the season is over.
Yeah, well said. Well said. And everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on that and this episode and everything that we've been talking about. And there are many ways for you to do that. Perhaps the best way is to go to the Babel Conference. That is our closed listeners group on Facebook. If you're not yet a member, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right on up. If not, type the whole name. As I said, it is a closed group for listeners to discuss the topics that we talk about on our podcasts as a carryover. And so please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And then once you're in there, you'll see a post for this episode, and you can add your comments and join in the conversation with fellow listeners and Matthew and me right there. You can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Artificial Tango, and that'll come to us by email. You can also find us in social media on Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. Our username is TrekFM. And lastly, if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave ratings and reviews, we would love to get that from you as well. It helps others learn about and find the show. So thank you for everyone who's done that. And we would love to hear from you if you haven't. Now, Matthew, when you're not in the cutting room, re-editing this episode to make sure that everything flows just right, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, under the name MattRushing02. And I'm sure people of all ilks would probably like to yell at me. So that's exactly what social media is for. So enjoy it. You can also find me here on the network. We have an entire other side of the network, not devoted to Star Trek, but all of the other fandoms we love. It's called the 602 Club. We'd love to have you join us over there and listening to that, as well as there's a couple of bonus shows in the same feed where we've got some more focused topics like Snyder Cuts or Assembling Avengers. And then here on the network, you can also find me doing Warp 5, Literary Treks, and The Orb. Now, Warp 5, Chris, you and I, we walk through all of the episodes right now of Star Trek Enterprise, celebrating 20 years of that show. Of course, you could find me as well with Literary Treks and talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek there. And then The Orb, we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Chris, which we love doing and hope people will enjoy checking that out. And then last but not least, I'm over on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One is called Owl Post. That's a completed show. It is all about Harry Potter, as Drea Kaufman and I discussed every single chapter of that series, one chapter at a time. And then my good friend John DeMills and I are on a show called Aggressive Negotiations as we talk about Star Wars every week. Now, Chris, when you're not dancing the night away here with the Artificial Tingo, where can people find you?
Yeah, you know, I'll just be sneaking into that cool party for the Europa mission because I hear they have the best champagne there and great music
it's
as well.
It's real good.
When I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network here. As you mentioned, talking DS9 with you on the Orb, Enterprise on Warp 5. I have Interphase, which is a Star Trek Universe podcast, and Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time. And then I'm working on behind the scenes things as well. If you'd like to chat with me about Star Trek or Japan or whatever you'd like to talk about, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That is my username everywhere in social media, but Twitter is where I am most active, and I'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to help us keep this show and everything that we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. If you'd like to find out how to support the network, how to get involved in the network, go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. You can become an associate producer, for example, of this show, just like Cornelia Rutner. So, Cornelia, thank you so much for supporting the Artificial Tango, and thank you to everyone who is supporting us through Patreon right now. We could not keep this going without your help. Thank you so much for everything. Well, Matthew, I can't wait to see where the story goes next, and a week from now, we'll be doing the Artificial Tango together once again.
Chris, make it so.